Live from the Bills' famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub, the 85th edition of the Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Now, tonight we are down one man of our usual four-man crew. Unfortunately, the poet laureate of the Blockout Sports Pod, Mr. Electricity, is unable to join us tonight. But
I don't know how we can even go on because we don't know what time it is. Nobody's here to write stuff down for us. Like, this is going to be impossible.
Yeah, I mean, we're down to the original three.
All right. Sorry to get you off your intro rhythm.
That's okay.
I got a little scared. I don't really know how we're going to handle this.
We're going to just try to fight our way through this. But over my right shoulder at the high top table, you just heard him, is the big fella, the tuna country, Matt Kempf. And bellied up to the bar is a man who makes your heart sing. The wild thing, the fabulous one, Freddie Benders.
Well, I kind
of... Is that Freddie? I thought it was Kenny Lofton.
Hey. Or Willie Mays Hayes, however you want to say it.
Did he play at Cleveland?
I thought about wearing my Spanish national Euro Cup champion jersey, but I've been wearing it so much it's in the wash, later to be hung up in the trophy room. So I thought I would bust out one of my favorite players of all time since it's All-Star Game night, and that is Kenny Lofton. I know I kind of look like Wild Thing, too.
Yeah.
And I sported... You
or
thought
Coach
that,
Lou
did you
Brown.
Did you think this was a Braves hat?
I did from a distance.
Bama
seen the
fans
a
will
in.
Never appreciate the well, script A.
I'm glad you brought that up, because didn't you send our group text like last week that Bama was suing somebody?
They are.
Who is that?
I can't remember who it was.
Because
it
the
was
A looks similar?
The A looks similar. It was so what, NIL. It was the NIL...
It's Liv.
Yeah, I mean Liv, not NIL.
Oh, the Aces.
Yeah, all these Aces. Abbreviations drive me crazy. It was the the Aces, and they do have a strange, goofy-looking script.
So do the
A.
Braves just get off the hook?
Well, the Braves don't have the script A. It's different.
It looks just like that one.
No, not really. It's different.
I mean, it's pretty similar.
It looks
closer than the Aces logo.
The Braves A is more cursive. The script A is different.
I think they figured out that Major League Baseball has more and better lawyers.
True. I don't know.
Perfectly honest.
If the SEC backs up Alabama, I'd take their lawyers over anybody at this point.
I'm saying instead of Liv.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But now that you mention it, you know, Kenny Lofton, one of my favorite players of all time, six-time All-Star, .299. Batting average, four gold gloves, tons of postseason awards and rec. And I'm sure he's up at the top for a lot of things for their run in the postseason. And in my opinion, should be a Hall of Famer. Maybe
I
think he's right on the edge.
I think that's a consensus opinion.
He's like a borderline Hall of Famer, right?
Right.
I've ever
it's close.
Spoken to anyone who said that he did not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't know.
I mean, he led the league in stolen bases for 5 years. I think big time stolen. I'm talking like 80 or something.
Well, didn't you when
in
you
a season
when you watch Major League now? You mentioned Willie Mays Hayes. Don't you automatically
that
think
was the
of,
spinoff of Kenny
of Kenny Lofton?
Yeah, one of the greatest leadoff.
He
kind of
looks like him, and all that.
Definitely one of the greatest leadoff hitters of all time, and I'll never forget one of his final games with the Indians before he started traveling to lots of teams, and maybe that didn't help him. But he did play for
that.
A lot of teams, like maybe 8, 9, or 10. But he,
yeah, you think
he
of
made,
the Indians?
He,
when you
we
think of
we were
yeah.
at,
everybody thinks of him. With
right.
Cleveland.
We were in the game versus the Marlins. Of course, everybody knows it. Game 7, Craig Counsell, Renteria, they made the play that mattered. Jose Mesa was 3 outs from winning it.
Was that Tony Fernandez that botched that at second base? It went. Ooh, he had a play.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it,
yeah,
I think
well,
you're right.
Well, Vizquel was playing short. But yeah, and we, anyways, his last at bat to try to make something happen slid into first base and gave it everything he had, and he broke his wrist in that game. And I still love him for that, because if he would have gotten on base at the end after Mesa blew it, it was a great game. Obviously, I'm a huge Reds fan and have been since a kid, but I've always had a little something in my heart for the Indians a little bit. Maybe part of that's from the movie, but I loved Kenny Lofton. Also a Final Four basketball player for the Arizona, for University of Arizona.
The Wildcats.
Yes, the Wildcats. He was on the Final Four team back in, I'm guessing,
the pride of the Big
1988. 12.
With was Kerr on that team?
Yes.
Okay.
Sean Elliott.
Yeah,
yeah, and
of
they,
course.
Yep. They played in that 88 Final Four. Oklahoma was in there.
Danny Manning and the Miracles
won.
Yep. Yeah, it's Danny
but,
and the Miracles.
He played on that team, started. So anyways, not to keep going, but Kenny was my boy. So I thought I'd wear his jersey for the All-Star
you
game.
Know, I think
I don't have a De La Cruz jersey.
I think last year when we were ranking like our favorite Final Four teams of all time, I believe you mentioned Arizona at one point.
Yeah, they had a great team.
Yeah.
Well, now Fred also is resplendent with his gold chain on.
Big words.
His lion's head pendant.
La Rojo, La Rojo.
If you've listened to this show for a long time, and I assume that if you're listening right now, you know that Fred is an enormous supporter of the Spanish national soccer team. They win the Euros. They beat England in a fantastic final on Sunday. yeah, we'll get to that. They win. They played almost what I would consider to be almost a perfect tournament. Obviously, they won every game that they played. And Fred, we're just going to open the floor to you. How did you feel about not just the final, but the performance of the team as a whole? And where you see them going forward. I will mention that there are whispers now that Spain's manager has reached out to the United States, the powers that be at U.S. Soccer, and has shown some interest in becoming the new head coach for the U.S. men's national team.
Is he jockeying for a raise from Spain? I've seen this move before in college sports.
Yeah, not as much, maybe, not as much on an international stage.
But Fred,
yeah,
hey,
I would love for that to happen. Spain will be just fine. But the United States is in desperation to find someone. And I love that they're going after people like Jurgen Klopp and going after, I still said, Silvinho from Albania, the Brazilian legend. Would be a great one, but just throw money at anyone. But he did a spectacular job with this team right down to the very end, guys. I mean, he puts in Oyarzabal and, you know, the sub comes in and within a certain amount of time gets the game-winning goal. Every move he made was splendid. I do think they played defense a couple times against Germany and France too long instead of trying to take the offensive and score another goal to lock it because they've been pinched in the ass there a couple times doing that in past years. But that was more tiki-taka related, and by that, everyone, mostly people know by now, that is dribbling small triangles all over the field and passing relentlessly small passes and working your way up or back the field with possession. And this team didn't have to do that much. They have a whole new identity. And, I mean, let's be real. The first half of that match, Tuna, was like watching paint dry. I mean, the Spanish team, I don't even think England touched the ball more than at least 13 or 14 times in the whole first half. Harry Kane was frustrated. He's a one-dimensional player, in my opinion. They needed different guys out there. But for a team to beat Germany, Croatia, France, Italy, and England says something, okay? And they didn't tie them, and it didn't go into PKs. They beat them. And that's the key to what they did in this tournament. They never had to get into penalties. And you know how that can go. Either way, you never know. You come up against a good goalie, like our, some of these goalies, and it's just not going to happen. But for them to be able to do that, they made long runs, they made short runs, they played great deep. Cucurella gets knocked for the handball, and I think a lot of the Spanish press is on him a lot. I thought he added a great bit of energy to this team on defense. He's not our best defensive player, but he's a relentless defensive guy, and for his size, and I thought he did great. Obviously, the additions of Nico Williams, one of Tuna's favorite players moving forward.
Yeah, huge Nico Williams guy.
Rodri gets player of the tournament, who leaves the game in the first half, and we still did it. Lamine Yamal, the now 17-year-old.
I like that he had a birthday like the day before.
He did, so the day before.
He's not a 16-year-old anymore.
And that kid, that poor kid, doesn't even shoot enough. He had some wide open shots he could have taken.
He had two nice shots.
And he'll learn. He'll learn. But no, you're
he's
right.
He's better than most guys.
He had like three
playing.
Assists, a goal. I mean, he was unbelievable. And then you got Danny Olmo, who could have easily been the gold. Who was the Golden Boot winner. Coming off the bench, and I'm going to get into this at the very end, but these two tournaments we're getting ready to talk about, the Euro Cup and the Copa, in my opinion, was about the camaraderie. Yes, the flopping a little bit, the red cards, the yellow cards. I'll tell you what it's really about. Substitutions. The reserves. This tournament, both tournaments will be known by me for the great job that the reserves did and how important they are in soccer. But Oyar, like I said, Oyarzabal gets the win. England was just landlocked. They did make a great play on the goal. Guess who scored the goal for England, Travis?
Well, I know it wasn't Harry Kane.
It was a person that came in for him.
I know.
It was another substitution.
Martinez.
We'll get to him. But Bellingham couldn't do nothing. Kane couldn't do nothing. Bellingham looked lost out there. Really, there's not much to talk about in the Euro final. Spain dominated it. They scored the goal when they needed it at the end with the substitution. And the Golden Boot winner of the Euro Cup was a substitute. The Spanish Armada invaded England in 1558, and, buddy, they did it again in the final. Okay, but
we got a Freddie Benders history lesson
and I know that England fired Southgate today.
They didn't fire him.
Oh, no, he stepped down.
Right.
And I think he did great things for them. He was with them from 2016. I think he amped England up. He did play a part with the young players who I still don't think are there yet. They're nowhere near Spain's young players. Fodder and all them. They're going to be great, and maybe they're great in the Premiership. But they're not up on some of the younger players that Spain has. So in a nutshell, before we get into the Copa, That was my Euro Cup rundown. I didn't know if y'all wanted to add something to the Euro Cup.
Well, I just I thoroughly enjoyed the tournament, as we've talked about. I watched as much of that tournament as I've watched anything relative to soccer, except maybe a World Cup before. And I had predicted at the beginning of the tournament that Spain and England would play in the final and that Spain would win. They were the best team over the course of the entire tournament. And I feel like the best team won.
And before we get off that, because I was going to talk about this after we talk about both tournaments, but I'd rather do it now because I feel like I'm kind of knocking the Euro Cup a little bit. And I'm not. It's just the European teams tend to play defense more. I don't want to say they're more polished. They're just maybe not as reckless as the Copa players.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah,
Brad.
Reckless. There's so many words that I'm going to get into for this Copa final.
Explain something to me real quick, soccer guys. So when the announcers say they're playing not to lose here, like what are they doing? They just...
Well, they're sitting back. They're sitting back, and they're just going to... The only way they're going to try to get a goal is by a counter, which is, oh, my God, the ball... They shoot a quick ball, the goalie gets it, rolls it out, and someone makes a run.
The soccer aficionados would call it parking the bus.
Right.
Where everybody comes back, it's all about playing defense, and like Fred said...
And pulling them off sides... If you can, like a lot of those defenders know exactly when and how to line up and pull a player offside.
I'm sorry, real quick, guys. We've got an insane moment happening. Paul Skeens versus Aaron Judge, and it just ended real quick.
What happened?
He grounded out. But, like, I wanted to see that matchup, and we got to see it. But anyway, what was the question? I love soccer. Good stuff.
But you're a hockey guy.
Yeah.
Do you remember in the 90s, the big thing was the offsides trap?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, to a certain extent, some of these soccer teams not necessarily use the offsides trap, but they use offsides as an extra defender almost. Like Fred said, they know when that pass is getting ready to be made to go forward.
I got you.
And you get that offsides call. But there is...
There's a downfall to that, I would feel like.
Well, there is.
Yeah. When England goes into this game, put it this way, they already know that they're overmatched. Soccer's a little different than saying it before the championship NCAA final in college basketball. And then the team that you thought was overmatched... makes this great cut, starts hitting threes and everything. England knew Spain passes so well, and they're playing so great that they're already in trouble in this game. There's nothing they can really change. So they go back in a defensive stance and try to get maybe a counter to Harry Kane.
I get
or
you.
A header on a set piece.
I just feel like there's still some rules that I don't understand. Like, I feel like it'd be easy in soccer to eat time off the clock. You know what I mean? Like, I really believe that. They can just take their time with a lot of stuff.
It's hard, but the ball's moving all the time.
Well, yeah, but, you know, they take their time getting to the corners and you know, the goalies. How long can a goalie hold on to a ball before he has to get rid of
it? They actually changed those rules.
Well, they'll get a card if they hold it too long.
They actually changed those rules. I was watching a video on Twitter where they showed a Euro final from the 90s where, and I apologize to all the people that listened last week that are from Europe, because you guys will know what game I'm talking about, and off the top of my head,
probably cussing me,
I don't remember, but they showed like 10 minutes of highlights where it was literally the goalie would kick to a defender, the defender would stand there with his foot on the ball.
Goalkeeper.
For a minute, turn around, kick it back to the goalie. The goalie would then turn, kick it to another defender. They changed the rules because of that. And now, as Fred said, you'll get a card for, like, wasting time or whatever.
But,
I don't know how exactly
So it's up to the referees who have been...
Yeah, and of course, you get the best ref for both the championship games, which I thought were both phenomenal.
No, they were. They let them play a lot, I thought.
And we'll get into the referee in the Copa because that may have been the best referee game I've ever seen.
I completely. That was probably one of the most entertaining soccer games.
No, hold on, we're getting there. Well, what I wanted to get at is I didn't want to knock the UEFA teams in Europe and the tournament itself because the Copa is so reckless and more fun to watch, and the style of play is different. But I had a guy on someone's chat that I was looking at that was helping me out. Who knows? He might be a listener. But the last 40 years since 1986, I have the Final Four of every team in the World Cup. And if you go through, and I have the winners circled, 44 spots. In those games, 33 of those spots are UEFA Europe teams. 9 are from CONMEBOL, which is the abbreviation of the Copa America teams.
Okay.
And 2 were from elsewhere.
Those are specifically the South American
right,
teams.
Not CONCACAF, but CONMEBOL.
CONMEBOL.
So if you think about it, the Europeans are going, oh, this Freddy guy, I'm ready to kill him. What's he talking about? Look, I'm giving you props.
Every European has an Italian
33
accent.
Of those teams, 33 of them.
If they weren't ready to kill you before, they are now that horrific accent.
Well, I didn't climb the walls and jump in through an air duct to go watch the game, but no.
Sorry, you don't love the game.
33-9. In the World Cup. So that tells you how strong European teams are when they play against the style that we like better. Just to go into that, and I can't wait to look at some of these teams that I circled just looking back since 86, and that was Maradona, Argentina in 86, which is very cool, 40 years ago. But you want to get into the Copa?
I would love to talk about the Copa. It started rather unbelievably with, an hour and 20-minute
insanity
delay because fans were storming the gates and...
mostly Colombian fans.
Trying to get in and...
trying to get in. They did. They were getting in.
They did
pretty
get
impressive,
in.
I think
really.
They had screwdrivers with them. They're getting through the air ducts like they've done this for years.
The head of the Colombian Football Association or whatever.
He got arrested.
71 years old. He's out there fighting dudes. Him and his son.
Yep, he got arrested.
It was
like
an
three
felonies.
Scene.
And... we can laugh about it now because it appears that no one was seriously injured or anything like that.
26 arrests.
But I was very scared that there could have been, and there easily could have been a tragedy there. Because if you see any of the...
Stuart Holden's wife and child was in the middle of that.
Yeah.
The announcer.
It was close to being like a stampede situation almost. And thankfully, it didn't turn out that way. But with all that being said, the game finally started.
I would think there'd be more fights in the seats because you had people that paid upwards of like $2,000 for these tickets. And people were just sitting in their seats and security was like, we can't do anything about it.
And a lot of the people that paid that money never even got in the stadium. So
if I pay $2,000 for anything, you better believe I'm.
I hear you, but once that thing starts, your eyes are glued to it.
It was crazy. But with all that being said, the game starts. Colombia, Argentina. You know, everybody's. You know, Messi, Di Maria. The possible for some of these guys their last shot with the national team, and I thought that the game lived up to. all the hype.
Oh,
Fred.
Guys, I watched this game by myself outside of the Capstone, perfectly happy, had my high noons on ice, and, buddy, let me tell you something. This match, it was hyped up, and it was just somewhat of a thing of beauty. Just the intensity of every play, the announcers, Stu holding them, should be commended. They were fantastic in all these matches. All the coverage for all these, the people at halftime, everyone, fantastic on these matches from Fox. Absolute fantastic. At one point, I think I texted y'all and said, this is Bama LSU 6-3 SEC championship times 1,000. Because if you're watching this match, a lot of people are thinking, this is so freaking boring, like the first half of the other one. But it wasn't. It was, the passing was better. The intensity was better. Messi was hurt. Then it started getting into where his, you know, we talked about his ankle, his hammy. We thought it was his hammy. We later saw his ankle. And, buddy, that ankle injury came from him going out of bounds on that corner and kicking it, and that dude's foot just sticking out at him kicking it. And then you wonder how some of these little cleat plays that everyone says are a joke, that's what it looks like when you actually get a hold of one of those.
I think there was a lot of complaints about the quality of the turf also.
Yeah, well, the turf looked ripped up after the game. Yeah. Well, dude, they started the sprinklers in the second half to get it a little bit wet. Well, you know a soccer ball just slides right off that when it hits the ground on a hard shot or something. But, guys, the intensity of it. Di Maria playing, I jotted a few things down here. The Messi's third major tournament in a row, third win. Colombia on a 28 unbeaten match streak. And the last time that they lost was against Argentina, 1-0. Rodriguez is playing great. The defenders for Colombia, Lermo, Sanchez, Rios, played fantastic soccer the whole tournament. Rodriguez gets player of the tournament. Luis Diaz, the forward striker, came in great. Quintero comes in overtime and has some moves that people are like, who's this guy? I knew who he was. He's the human fire plug, and he has moves. But here again, guys, I'm waiting.
Human fire plug.
Yeah, and then
what is that?
He's like a fire hydrant. He's this little fire
like
plug
a little red
that has
thing
moves. But Di Maria, 36 years old, he's playing into double overtime in his last match. I mean, and playing fantastic. The referee is having the best game that I've ever seen in a soccer game that had that much craziness going on. Fully in control, making great calls on everything, giving the cards to the right people that deserved them, and not giving them to the people that didn't deserve them. A lot of people didn't know there were 2 15-minute periods in the final. That does happen in the Copa America final. But what do we get to, guys, at the end? Substitutions. The reserves, again. These tournaments, guys, were built on the substitutions, the reserves. Lo Celso comes in. Probably times you think he practices with Martinez on the second team. You don't think they pass the ball to each other a lot? You get him in there with him. And, of course, I'm like telling you all, where is Martinez? How is he not in yet? He's getting ready to be the Golden Boot winner, and he hasn't gotten in yet. They put him in, and within 3 minutes, guys, Lo Celso connects on a beautiful toe poke the opposite direction to Martinez. And if you look at Martinez scoring, dude, he looks the other way. He looks at the goalie, looks down, cool as a cucumber. I want to hear something from you all on this match. I mean, I thought it was just fantastically intense every play. It just... I don't know. Tune it. Give me something from your perspective.
I don't know, man. I enjoy it. I can't touch what you just broke down because I don't understand the game like what you just did. I don't know these guys' names, but just it's just
you
some,
had to feel the intensity.
Just some dipshit
there.
Sitting there watching soccer. I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was intense. The refs let them play. There was hardly any flopping at all.
Right,
these guys were
so
playing
much.
Physical. They were getting down and they were popping right back up.
Right,
and it was just it looked like I don't know. I enjoy it. Like I said, it was a different sport than the Euro. I enjoyed watching Spain England. It was fine. I could have skipped that game and lived life just fine.
Right.
I'm so glad I stayed up late and finished that Copa match because I enjoyed every second.
You didn't think that Messi, when he went down and had to leave the game, was a total flop?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, for those that didn't see it, Google an image of his ankle.
Yeah, that was bad.
I took a picture on my TV screen. And, dude, that's nothing. I mean, Messi is literally weeping on the bench, weeping, and they couldn't show it because they didn't want everyone to get crazy, and finally they did. But and then Di Maria coming off the field crying, and, like, dude, it was just – it had everything. And,
I'll tell you something that soccer adds that I don't get in other sports is the crowd environment is better than anything you'll ever watch.
Oh, dude, you are right.
That gets me into it, I think, more than anything else. Just the pans to the crowd and watching how these guys are hanging on to every second.
I had a buddy, one of our buddies that doesn't watch any soccer, was watching one of the games. He goes, you know what I think is the coolest thing? And he goes, and we were talking about the Americans and the Ryder Cup, who may not care as much. And maybe the U.S. national team doesn't care as much. Just that, I know America and USA, we do care. But when you see fans like that, I'm saying the USA fans that are in Kansas City don't cry and care as much. But just the
I think the thing is, all right, well, I'm not going to say it. Like, football fans, NFL fans are incredible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They
like,
are. But they can't touch it.
The problem is, the problem is that the Super Bowl, you're not getting the fans in there
that care.
So that ruins, or not ruins, but it dilutes the Super Bowl
away
a little bit.
Sure.
Like the AFC and NFC championship games that are played at the home stadiums,
right,
those have way more juice to them, man. And that's what makes the NFL great. College football fans, that's the best. Some of the best environments you'll get.
Right,
you know what
true,
I mean? When you got 100 people showing up on a college campus, 100,000 people showing up on a college campus on a Saturday afternoon, you got, like, you know, 60-year-old guys with their faces painted, but are like these championship matches, like same thing with college football, same thing with college basketball, NBA, whatever. Well, NBA, I guess you get home crowds, but it's just, it's different. Like these large outdoor stadiums, it's, we don't get the true championship vibe at those.
Right, right. But are you got something, Travis?
Well, I was just going to say, you know, we've been talking for years and years and years about the growth of soccer in the United States. And it has come in fits and starts. But I thought this was a very interesting tidbit as far as the viewership of the Copa America. Less than 10 years ago, I should give some credit here, Michael Mulvihill on Twitter posted this earlier today. Less than 10 years ago, the Copa America final aired in the United States on BN Sports. And
I had that channel.
Yeah.
It averaged 465,000 viewers.
That's not a lot.
Less than 10 years later, on Fox, national, big-time Fox, 6 million viewers, and was the number one program of the entire week in prime time. That, to me, not only shows that people in the United States care more than they did before, but there is obviously a tremendous amount of people that want to see this, that want to see, you know, and I'm sure that a lot of those people are rooting for other teams, but you can't tell me that there is not a tremendous desire for the United States to become good enough to compete in these kind of tournaments. And boy, can you imagine if the United States ever ended up in one of these finals?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be crazy.
My God. I mean, you got $6 million for this game.
We probably still use our tickets to get in the gate, though.
Right, right.
Well, it depends on where the
game
is.
Yeah, that's true.
It depends on where it's being played.
That's true, yeah.
I mean,
I'm giving us a lot of credit here.
They put
the
that thing in Morgantown.
Yeah.
But, so Messi goes
but
out.
Putting it on Big Fox, I think, was
oh, it's
big.
Huge.
Like, oh,
and
yeah.
It on
yeah,
the,
yeah
and, which is surprising because, look, Ohtani.
Oh.
All right.
Home run.
Let's go National League. Nobody likes the American League.
I don't
League.
Like him in that light blue hat. Looks like Ole Miss.
But having him a Big Fox, and it blows my mind because when I look at soccer, there's not the money to be made in advertising because of the lack of commercial breaks. Like, and I think that probably has to drive some of these TV
That's
execs.
That's
interesting
nuts.
Because
That's a very good point.
I wonder how that works because –
maybe it's all at halftime.
Well, and I guess, you know, there's like sponsorships throughout the game, but
yeah.
that's a very good point, Tuna, and that's something I've never looked into.
That's kind of was like my whole conspiracy on why we don't get a lot of soccer coverage in the United States years ago was because the TV markets can't make money on it. But I guess they figured out a way to monetize it, or they're just like, I don't know. I mean,
well,
maybe it's a way to advertise their other shows that they're having. I don't know, but all around the soccer, like down low around the pitch is, I call it a pitch.
It is the pitch.
It's a pitch.
Tuna.
I got you.
Damn good job.
Well, I watch rugby. It's called a pitch as well. And, but they advertise, they keep changing that up around there. So, I mean, there's advertisement that you can see down there. But
all of our friends from Europe, please chime in and give Tuna his props.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Calling it a pitch. Mm-hmm. Tuna, what do you call the clothes.
Those are kits.
Oh, my
Those are
God.
Kits. And you guys keep calling it a game, boys.
What do they
it's
call
a match.
What do they call their cleats?
Boots.
Boots, that's right.
Oh, my God. I mean, you might as well be the color commentator
you
for
know
next.
What's the spray called?
You know what's
the cold spray called?
Oh, I have no idea.
I don't either.
But the last two questions that you asked
but
me.
But I want to buy some
I didn't
of
even
that
know
stuff.
That I knew that until you asked me. And then I was like, that's ingrained in my brain somewhere from listening to you two. So it was just like information that was there.
Next
I didn't
time
know I
I'm
had.
At an outdoor concert, I want some of that spray to spray on my head. Ah! But it's 90 degrees out.
Just get you some smelling salts.
But hey, great stuff, guys. To put a button on that, let's be real. This was the Martinez and Martinez show. Okay? And by that, I mean, yes, Messi was there. Yes, Di Maria was there. They got sent out by the next crew coming in, and that is Martinez, who is the Golden Boot winner, also a substitution reserve, and the goalkeeper, Martinez, who is the best goalkeeper in the world, in my opinion. Last four shootouts in his last three tourneys, he has won as a goalkeeper. Okay, let's remember the goalkeeper Martinez could have also won player of the tournament. But that I just think to put a button on it, like I said, the reserves and substitutions and the subs in these games, they all make 100 or 80 million just like everybody else does. And that's what a lot of casual fans don't know. They have no idea that the guys on the bench are some of the greatest players in the world. And some of the ones that aren't are like some of the most important players on their team in the league that they play in. And Martina, I mean, I really feel like the really, if you take away what was the theme of these two tournaments, it was the reserves. How important the substitutions are and the players that come off the bench how important they are and how many of them scored. I tried to go back and find it, and I could not find how many goals that they scored in each tournament. But I'm going to tell you, it's a lot. And those are players that are quality players that sit on the bench and they watch and they see the holes. Is everybody a little bit more tired when they get out there? Yes. But they also see things that are happening out there on the pitch that other players aren't seeing. And, man, I'll tell you what, kudos to those guys. They're the ones, the Olmos, the Martinez. Omo. They won these matches for everyone.
Let's, I almost forgot, since you brought up his name, let's not forget that Olmos made the game-winning play.
Oh, with his head.
With his head.
The header to save the goal.
God, I mean, that was pretty sweet.
That was the winning play.
Right.
Talk about right place, right time.
He had a couple
time.
Of assists. Right, no, but he was there.
And then to have the heads up too.
And
hey,
remember when we talked about the U.S. needing a dog? They need a dog. They need a guy that can put the ball in the net that just seems, you know, there always seems to be our
they
buddy.
Made a movie about that.
Our buddy the UK Bill. Our buddy Bill was telling me. After Martinez scored, and I was like, how come he's not in yet? He just seems to be a step ahead of everyone else, and he's always around the ball. You know what I mean? Hey, other guys come in, and they're nowhere near it. But how did that guy score in 3 minutes and no one could in that whole match? And it just goes to show you that sometimes players just know where to be better than other players. And that's who the U.S. needs to find.
Can
they
say this, like, about the U.S.? I don't know. All right. Obviously, like you guys. But when I watched U.S. play in the World Cup and for the first match or two of – or the first match
right.
of the Copa is – I thought Tim Weah has kind of got a little dog in him. And
until he got a red card.
Yeah, but he – will get your goal. He will take the shots on the goal. He will also smack a player upside the head.
Yeah. Right.
But that's what a dog does, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, except he turned into a puppy and screwed his team.
Yeah, I mean, that sucked.
So,
but you know what? You're talking, you want a guy that plays with emotions.
I know.
And sometimes you got to take the bad with the good.
But we can't. I'm here to tell you that play – ruined the whole tournament for the U.S. It really killed momentum.
But to be fair, you talk about Luis Suarez all the time. He bit a guy one time.
He did.
That guy deserved it.
Thierry Henry got run out of a World Cup final.
Right.
For headbutting a guy.
Right. Well, Zidane.
Or no.
Zidane.
I'm
yes.
sorry. That's who it was.
Yeah.
I apologize to my French.
After
French
Zidane also. Had already won.
But
no.
But, like, it's almost like those are.
But they've already done something.
I know, but
we
I'm
need
just saying
that needs to do something before he screws
he made
his
a,
team.
He made a huge
it was just
mistake.
Horrible timing.
He made a huge mistake.
Horrible timing.
But it was almost a crime of commission rather than omission. He was.
Right.
I think Tuna
he owes us all. For
I think
the next
Tuna was
2 years
was dead on the money. He's the kind of guy that you want on your
and
team.
And he was the guy I was pumping up, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Remember, I was pumping him up in that first match. Like, man, Weah has changed his game. He's got that spunk. And then he went to be my most hated player of all time. I mean, what can I say?
Well, I don't know he should be your most hated player
is
of
right
all
now.
Time.
He needs to step up. He owes me a lot. He owes everybody a lot. He owes all the fans. All he owns his country and
I'll let
all
you
of
off
his
the
players.
Hook, Tim. I got your back, Tim.
Put
you got
that,
a little Draymond
put
Green
on,
in
put
you,
put that
man.
On the airwaves.
You got a little
they
Draymond Green in you.
Sent him home on a UPS plane by himself after that. Said, find your way home, buddy. Anyways, great tournaments. It's all over. We're done with soccer. Get ready for other great things, guys.
Yeah, so I do want to just right here at the
football.
End. I know that we did have a bunch of listeners in Europe last week, and that was super cool. We love to see it.
Stay with us.
Yes, and if you are one of those listeners in Europe, please tell your friends about it. We will talk about soccer during the Olympics. We'll be talking about soccer. Give us a follow. We are on social media, on Twitter at Blockout Pod, on Facebook. Just type in Blockout Sports Pod into your search engine. And we very much appreciate.
Did Peru make the Olympics in soccer?
Yes. Boy, that's a hell of a question.
They made the Olympics and just being awesome.
I hope your team made the Olympics.
But to go back to the listeners in Europe, I think we're probably here in the next month or two. We're going to get a lot of listeners in Europe, or at least what's going to show up to be listeners in Europe and in random parts of the country. As people in Kentucky start to discover what VPNs are, it was brought to my attention that adult websites are blocking out the state of Kentucky now for some reason.
Oh, really?
And so, yes. So Wait, don't be surprised. Yes. I don't know. We'd have to ask Jody. He's our smut guy, and he's not here. Whiteboard Jody. So, but.
Our smut guy.
Yeah, he's our local smut guy.
You want to talk about a guy taking strays when he's not even here. I mean, now he...
You got to show up to defend yourself, buddy.
I refer to him as the poet laureate. Mm-hmm. You refer to him as the smut guy. I'm not sure you could have two more diametrically opposed terms for the same person.
Hey, maybe he's poetic about his smut.
But
I'm just saying the VPNs are going to be showing out. But anyway, go on, Freddie.
Speaking of foreign listeners,
I was just about to say, since we did have a lot of European listeners last week, and I am a super mark. I love the Masters. Okay, everybody that listens to this show knows that. But my single favorite golf tournament of the year. Every year is the British Open, or
yes,
as
the Open,
it's known over there, the Open Championship.
Of course, you know I love it too.
And we have it coming up starting on Thursday this week at Royal Troon.
Love getting up in the morning.
I do too.
Early morning. That's how
one of my favorite things is to wake up at like 6 a.m. and just turn on the broadcast, and I'll just sit in bed and be half asleep for the first hour and a half. And then I get up and come downstairs and get something to drink. And then you watch it till, 2 o'clock. And then you can watch the replay and catch up on everything that you missed before. But Royal Troon is one of the classic.
Love it.
One of the classic courses. They've obviously hosted several Open championships in the past. I'm going to get into some of the historical championships that they have hosted, but I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on maybe some guys that you're looking at as far as we know who the favorites are probably going to be, maybe some guys that are off the beaten path a little bit, and I wanted to get maybe what you guys' favorite Open memory is. Just kind of off the top of your head, we did not prepare for this, but something that you guys remember from Open Championships in the past, and we'll start with Tuna.
I'd probably say Tiger Woods at St. Andrews. Just, something about St. Andrews, too. I like that course with those four par fours, the way it ends out, and then you got to hit it long there. And I don't know, it's just something about Tiger at that point in time when he was winning the way he was. And how he came in there at St. Andrews, and he had his red on Sundays and closed it out. But I'd say that's probably it for me. Fred?
Oh, mine is by far Jean-Claude Vandeveld. that whole fiasco.
Loved him in Lionheart. Was
some of the craziest stuff I've ever seen in...
it was Tin Cup come to life.
In golf. I mean, and the announcer, because the announcer was... well, Curtis Strange was there, but it was the older guy. What's his name?
Was it Peter Arliss, perhaps?
Oh, no, I'm talking about American. At one point, wasn't it the guy that...
Ken Venturi?
Ken Venturi, I think. I just remember being, what is he doing now? You know, he's taking his shoes off. He's in... Just the strokes that were melting away and the look on his face and his caddy is stuff that I would love to watch that tournament again. I also look back to the Tom Watson when he missed the putt. He got maybe a little nervous when he was making...
Well,
when he was older, but
what people need to remember about that is Watson hit probably almost a perfect shot into 18,
perfect,
and got a terrible bounce.
Yes,
or he would have won a major at like 62 years old.
Right, right. And I was so pulling for him. And
I'll never forget, Fred. I was actually playing golf that morning, and you and I used to have a thing. Relative to sports where I would go, okay.
Yeah.
And you sent me a text and you said, we're 5 minutes away from one of the biggest okays in sports history.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, he's going to win. And then you sent me a text like 5 minutes later and you said, he missed it.
Yeah. It was like his putter hit the ground, the turf. It was like,
In retrospect, it wasn't a bad putt or anything.
No,
it just didn't go in.
And who went on to win that?
Stewart Cink.
Stewart Cink.
Yep.
Who's still playing. But man, and I'm giving you more than one, but just, yeah, you know what? I remember all the crazy, nervous, not the chokes, but the Spieth when he's on the back nine. Coming down, and I don't even remember where that was, but that was another one that was absolutely insane. That's what I love about the Open Championship. The wind's blowing. It's wet. It's raining. This is where golf was founded in these the respect that you have to give the fans and the knowledge.
I just love that the weather – typically almost always comes into play.
Right, the bunkers, the huge...
Yes,
you
get into one of those pothole bunkers. It may take you three shots to get out. You may have to turn around backwards or sideways just to get it out. My favorite memory of the Open is probably, I believe it was 1995 when John Daly won it.
Oh, man.
And he's wearing that blue Reebok, like, pullover.
Yeah.
Is that when the dude streaked the course?
Possibly. That's probably happened a few times.
He was naked and he had a sign that said 19th hole as he ran past the green.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That probably was that. But I just remember watching that final round and being... Like, that was the tournament that turned me into a every-week-watching-golf fan, was watching that tournament.
I would love to see that tournament again.
And
God.
Watching Daly come down the stretch and the fact that, you know, it was a...
Oh, boy, from Arkansas.
It was a huge deal and
came
super
out of nowhere.
Fun. I wanted just to talk quickly about a couple things that have happened at Troon. The first Open there was in 1923, and we're not going to talk about that, or 1950. But in 1962, it was still very cost prohibitive for Americans in particular to go to play the Open, to play the British Open. You typically lost money because the purse was not very high. But Arnold Palmer, amongst a thousand things that he did for the game of golf, He said, I think that if you want to be considered the best golfer in the world or one of the best golfers in the world, you've got to be able to come to Europe to play the British Open, to play in these conditions, to play these courses the way that they're laid out, and prove that you can play in all different scenarios. So in 1962, yeah, 1962, Arnold Palmer comes to Royal Troon and wins the British Open and really kind of elevated that tournament in the American consciousness. But really, you know, Arnold Palmer at that time was a worldwide phenomenon and really elevated that tournament to a level that it needed to get to. And then in 73, Tom Weisskopf wins the tournament there, his only major championship. In 82, in 82, as you mentioned, Tom Watson wins. In 89, Mark Calcavecchia wins it. And then in 97 is, I believe, would be the tournament that I... Oh, no, it was 2004. So... In 2004, somebody won, and I apologize again to our European listeners, but you could have given me 1,000 guesses as to who won the British Open at Royal Troon in 2004, and I would not have gotten this right.
Really?
I mean, literally 1,000 guesses.
Ernie Els.
No, I'm going to say in 2004... I'm going to go with Louis Oosthuizen.
How about...
You look like Louis Oosthuizen.
How about Todd Hamilton?
Is that even a real person?
Todd Hamilton.
Is he related to George?
Yes.
Todd Hamilton wins the... wins it,
and
then
an ice skater?
there was an ice
Scott
skater
Hamilton.
With Scott Hamilton. And then in 2016, of course, the Duel in the Sun Part 2 with Stenson and Phil Mickelson. And I think anybody that was watching that tournament will always remember that Sunday, the two guys going head-to-head, which is just fantastic. And I can't wait to see, because one thing, as I mentioned before, with the weather... This tournament, and I get that most tournaments are this way, but the British Open in particular can be completely turned on its head with one bad weather day. Like, you can get guys, like, for instance, at St. Andrews, if the wind is down and it's not raining, those guys will murder that course. But if the wind's blowing 25 mile an hour, and it's pouring down rain, the leader of that day might shoot 2 over par. So I can't wait to see it. Do you guys have any favorites that you're looking at?
Oh, I know Tuna does.
Yeah. This is a guy that I'd like to see put 4 straight days together. We've seen him play incredible golf. He finished top 5 in the Scottish Open this past weekend, Ludvig Åberg. I think
we love
God, he just can't close.
Nah,
right,
that's what
now.
I'm saying,
he's getting
man.
Right there. It's, he just can't close.
It's almost like he's the Swedish Max Homa. Like,
yeah, kind of right.
Right.
Yeah,
same
right,
guy.
Right.
And it's him. I don't know.
Man, I'm pulling for... I would love to see Tommy Fleetwood win this.
Yeah,
I really would. I think in his, you know, just a guy that's always been around the top. He's not as high up at the top as he was like 5-6 years ago, but he's always there. He's consistent. He's a great lad. I think Tommy Fleetwood's one of the coolest guys, and I would be so happy to see him win I kind of pull for those guys to win in their. Not that he's from Royal Troop, but you know what I'm saying.
In their championship.
Yeah, in their championship. I think it's cool.
Could you see Brian Harmon going back to back here
with a big dip in? Yeah. No.
Okay.
I think he
had a top 20 finish in last weekend.
Travis and I have in our jackpot that we picked Cam Smith, mm-hmm. a past winner, and Fitzpatrick.
Matt Fitzpatrick is a great pick, so, I think.
And we were the 11th pick out of 12, so I thought we did pretty good. But I think some guys, and then I'll let you go, Tuna and Travis, because I know y'all have more. I think I did a little homework and have heard that, Sun J.M. was, third or fourth in the Scottish Open?
Yep.
And his style fits this course. Corey Connors is a guy that's made the last three cuts, and he at the British Open.
I can never bet on him.
He's playing really well. He's from Canada.
I know. He disappoints me every time I put money on him.
Does he?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what it's like. He understands or knows somehow when I've got something riding on him.
And then Sepp Straka is another player that has played good golf out there. And I think you need to look at people like Oosthuizen. And people that play links courses that are older. For instance, Travis, what's his name? Is going to be there. Adam Scott plays.
Scott finished second in the Genesis.
He plays really well out there.
He was going to go to a playoff.
Stuart Sink's going to be playing out there. Some of those guys, the older guys, can still play these links courses with the best of them. You know what I mean? I'm a big fan of who's kind of coming on strong a little bit lately, Minwoo Lee.
That's your guy. You just
I
like
love
his look.
Minwoo. Well, he's a cool daddy. Cool. He's the cool daddy. Minwoo Lee is the man. I'm getting my stash. Look, does my stash look like him? Kind of.
I can't tell. The reflection from your hair gel is like messing the light up.
So. Obviously, the betting favorite, as we all know, is Scheffler.
Scheffler! He's going to be on one of the currencies soon.
Schauffele, Oberg, Colin Morikawa. Bryson, I think, is a...
We're all pulling for him, for sure.
He's an intriguing pick.
That's something I haven't looked at, is his past performances in link-style courses. I really don't know.
You heard what he did after
I haven't
he
looked
won
into
it.
I haven't tried to handicap him.
You know what he did
yet?
After they won the championship? They went back to the pool. Mm-hmm. They had the pool, played some pool volleyball, drank red wine out of it.
Now, Brooks won this thing in 2019.
Right.
So he's a guy to keep an eye on. And he is.
That's your boy.
It's definitely my boy.
Your boy.
And he's at plus 3,500 odds.
That's pretty good.
Where's your guy at, Travis? Is he the favorite?
He's the second favorite. Okay. He's at plus 850.
Well, who wouldn't want to see Rory win? I would love to see Rory win.
Well, I can
win
tell
this.
You one person who doesn't want to see Rory
Should
win.
Should we do a side
he's
bet?
Sitting, he's sitting right here next
I
to me.
I would love to see
at
Rory.
At the high
and,
top
and,
table.
I guess you've heard that Rory came out and was very, as he always is, dead honest on what he's been doing. Would he go to New York City and walk around to be around people that don't give a shit about his putt and don't have any idea who he is? I thought I read a thing that he just went and kind of just went and got a play. He knew some friends out there. Maybe it wasn't New York City. It was somewhere in a big city where no one gives a rat's ass about anything. And he just went and roamed around and got a new perspective from people that are like, that are walking past him, going to work in the morning, doing whatever they're doing. They're like, we don't care if you missed a putt. We don't even know who you are and what you do.
So he did a reverse walkabout.
He did.
Most people go out to like country or rural areas
right,
for a walkabout.
The ocean by themselves.
Rory goes to the big city and does a walkabout.
I think it's a great idea, personally. And he's been hanging out a lot with.
And he played great at the Scottish Open, too. Yeah. I mean, he was easily top 10. I'm not sure exactly where he finished, but just a few shots back.
Tied for fourth.
Okay. And so, of course, as you know, I am going to continue to take Rory to win a major until he finally does so. But I also have kind of a sneaky feeling about John Rahm this week. I have a weird feeling that, you know, he is going to play really,
so
really good golf.
That you brought this up, because at the last slap fight that I watched, John Rahm was actually in the crowd. And that's, I'm not kidding.
No
you.
Way.
I'm dead serious.
And I'm going to tell you.
Dead serious.
If there's a golfer that,
yes,
I think could win
slap,
power slap,
I agree.
It's John Rahm.
But I'm just saying, that's, I totally agree with that statement. But if there's ever anything that can cleanse a man's soul, it's not a walkabout in a city setting. It's going to power slap.
Which,
and John Rahm may come out firing.
I might take Shane Lowry on a power slap.
Which,
though,
by the way, those of you that listened last week will know that we talked extensively about power slap. And I said that I would take it upon myself to make sure and watch a power slap fight. Well, Tuna sent a link.
Oh, Lord, I watched it too.
Out to our group text, and I watched it. what was the guy's name?
Dumpling.
Yeah, Dumpling. and I'm going to tell you something. I didn't know what to expect. And when Dumpling hit this poor guy that he was, I guess ostensibly he's fighting this guy, although it wasn't, there was no fight. It was one slap. And
yes.
This guy, I mean, he went down like, I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life.
And that was the number 9th overall ranked slapper that got knocked out like that.
Okay. And I mentioned to Tuna, I said, one thing that I loved about it so much was, you know, they call boxing the sweet science. And they, you know, used to get like Floyd Patterson or somebody on the call, and he'd be like, well, when he turns to the left and he gets his jab going,
Larry
and
Merchant,
and it,
maybe.
And he does this, and he does that, and boy, though, the combinations and all this. And boy, you love to hear like the breakdowns like that. Whoever it was that was doing the color commentary on Power Slap, when they showed the replay, he goes, boy, he slapped the shit out of him, didn't he? And I just thought, that is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. So now I really am intrigued at least to follow Dumplin,
yes,
in his power slap career.
He's the Siberian farmer.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's our guy.
Just absolutely fantastic.
I mean, we're going to have a we need to get together for a slap.
No,
tournament.
the next like
I
want to
go
slap event. We're there.
I want to go to Vegas and watch one
that,
of these
dude,
tournaments.
I'm telling you what, like if I can put together the October trip with for everybody's birthday, for the Emily's birthday out there.
Can you imagine what? Can you imagine
it's there that weekend? We're going.
Can you imagine what I'm going to have to get in my wardrobe situation to find out what I'm gonna wear?
I cannot wait to. I don't know what I'd be more excited about, watching slapping or seeing what you come out with.
I mean, I'm gonna have to have some sort of headband. Like, I don't know. I'm just starting to think about it.
Yeah.
So
I might wear some special gloves.
So Fred,
some slap gloves, power slap gloves.
Getting quickly back.
To
we kind of went off, the,
sorry.
The power slap rails.
I was saying, good call on John Rahm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Getting quickly back to the Open Championship, Fred, who do you have?
Well, I have my guys. Who do I think's going to win it?
Yes.
One pick?
Yes.
I'm going to go with, it's not the guys that I like here. Come back to me.
Okay.
Real quick, just come back.
Well, I'm definitely taking Brooks to win this thing.
Okay.
You're taking Brooks.
And I'm taking Rory.
And I think, Travis, we should do a side bet on who finishes better,
Rory
or Brooks.
Who hasn't won a British Open.
Okay.
I'm going with Scheff. Why not? Scheff has not won a British Open yet.
No, and I mean, clearly he's at the top of the list. I mean, it's
that's a trophy he needs to add to his collection.
I would love to see him win.
How's he done in past British Opens?
I don't know.
Ah, that's some. See,
see,
I really,
that's why we need Mr. Electricity.
I know
here
it,
right
man.
Now.
Guys, I'm surprised we made it this far without him.
Hey, I got something for Mr. Electricity. Rose are red, violets are blue. La Roja 1 and Spain 2.
That makes it clear that Mr. Electricity's spot as the poet laureate of the Blockout Sports Pod is not in any danger of being usurped by the fabulous one. That's clear. Fred, have we given you enough time to pick out a winner?
No, I got Scheff.
Yeah, he took Scheff.
So
yeah.
I got Scheff.
That's your official pick.
Yeah, I'm going
that's
with
that's your
Scheff.
Official pick.
I'm going Scheffler.
I mean, he really went out on a limb there.
I went out on a limb there.
Well, I mean, I can't blame you. I picked Scheffler like three tournaments.
I mean, I like Cameron Smith personally. I mean,
I'm with you on there. I like Cam in this tournament.
Yeah.
Okay, so we will break down the Open Championship on next week's show. And again, we appreciate all of, well, not just all of our European listeners. We appreciate everybody. But especially we did notice the bump in European listeners last week, and we hope that you guys will stick with us. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. And let's get this thing.
Well, I know what they're going to get into, what we're talking about here in a minute, for sure.
College football?
Yes, that's what we're going to get. If they've got us hooked into, if Tuna's hooked into.
I'm still not sold that they're actually in
soccer,
Europe.
I think we can get them. They know that's what our passion truly is, right?
Do you think they have much television access to college football in Europe?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you think they have a
because
team?
Because I went on a cruise one time.
Notre Dame is in Ireland.
And I couldn't watch.
That's who they like in Ireland.
I couldn't watch any college football game. The cruise was on during Labor Day weekend.
How long ago was that?
Well, I mean, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, see, but, with streaming the way it is now, I mean, I think you can get anything you want, anywhere you want, pretty much. Now, you might have to work a little bit harder for it. But yeah, so college football is less than 50 days away. I think Tuna told me that the week zero games are some 30 some odd days away. And Freddie's favorite thing besides the games themselves, SEC Media Days are this week.
SEC Media Days, folks.
And I thought we would get into that a little bit. And Fred, I did not watch a second of any of this.
Well,
so I have nothing to add to this, but I would love to hear what you have as far as your takeaways.
Well, the beauty of SEC Media Days this year is the greatest college coach of all time,
Brian Kelly,
now retired, is an analyst on this and will be an analyst for games in the future.
Boy, I thought when you said he's an I thought you were going somewhere else that I might have gone. But analyst is what you were getting
analyst,
at.
Analyst,
I got
that's you. Right.
I got you.
And that would be Nick Saban. And he's really added he's really a breath of fresh air that's added to this. Someone who is basically, from what the other guys are saying, is fully prepared to another level, like he's getting ready to coach a SEC championship for every question that he has for a coach or whoever. But I did find it interesting that, they interview all the coaches. They're all down there expressing to everyone how their team's going to be. They have a couple representative seniors with them. And, Tuna, I'm going to go down the list here. I made my, since we're just doing SEC Media Days, the others haven't started yet. I did my top 16.
Well, that's all of them, ain't it?
Well, that's all the SEC schools.
So, top 16.
And I went through.
Is that your AP top 16,
no,
too?
No, that is okay. my actual top 16, and I have some little notes by them. But Georgia is my number one, of course.
Now, your boy Saban didn't peg them as number one.
No. He likes Texas.
Yeah, he does.
He likes Texas.
So you went against your Lord and Savior?
I did. I have Georgia opens with Clemson. That's my little tidbit with them. Tough game. And we won't go any further than that with them. You know, obviously Carson Beck's back, and I think he's going to be better than ever.
Who do they got catching the ball out there?
I don't know. They've got a few weapons. They've got. I just think that they're just names that are going to pop up, and we're going to know who the household names after it's all said and done. Mm-hmm. But they do not have his.
I know one thing about Georgia.
They don't have his tight end that he relied on a lot.
Georgia's offensive line, between the starters and the reserves, are averaging, what is it, 370?
Right.
That's insane. Right. Like that's just not right.
I know. I do want to tell you one thing that I've gotten from the SEC, listening to these analysts.
And these are athletic 370
pounds. Before we get into these teams, that there is a there's a theme going on in the SEC this year that I've heard a couple of analysts talk about.
That they don't mean as much
the offense, anymore? That the defense, that a lot of these people do not have a lot of big D linemen, and they think that there's going to be that this is going to be a season where we get back to old school smash mouth football
because of the lack of the size up front.
Because of the lack of the size up front, that they're going to be running the football a lot more.
Now I have a hard time believing that. I know Mississippi State has some big guys on that defensive line. It's a year in and year out thing with them.
Buddy, Mississippi State's at the bottom.
I'm with you, but I'm just
so
talking
ain't
about.
Worried about
I'm just
that.
Talking about size,
right?
On the defensive line.
I'm just some of the bigger teams.
Hey, UK has one of the largest. Kentucky has one of the largest human beings on their defensive line.
No, they do. But what I'm getting at is overall that they're finding that is starting to diminish a little bit, mm-hmm. and they think that they're going to start getting back to a little bit more old school football than it has been in the past. I'm not sure.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay. I'm not sure if NIL is coming into play. I mean, think about all the receivers.
It's just the style of game's completely changed anyway. Okay. Like, I'll believe it when I see it. And if you called that, then I'll be impressed.
I'm going to tell you right now, my number two team is Texas. I can't believe I'm saying that with them jumping right in here into the SEC. But their schedule is absolutely ridiculous. Do you know that who their first SEC road game is in mid-November?
Is it Bama or Georgia?
It's Vandy.
Oh.
Dude, come on.
Well,
Texas.
Don't make fun of Vandy while Travis isn't here. Oh,
I'm not
Travis, he's
of,
back.
I'm
yeah.
not making fun of Vandy.
You just got here just in time for the Vandy slander.
I'm saying that Texas.
I heard him taking a cheap shot at my beloved Commodores.
He was like, Travis ran off for a second. Now's the perfect time.
I'm telling you.
You know, the actual only thing that I heard from any SEC media days, you sent a text out yesterday and we're talking about it. So I was driving and I was flipping through channels and Paul Feinbaum was on.
Oh.
And he was interviewing Clark Lee, Vandy's head football coach.
The most confident man in the world.
And I listened to that, and by God, now I think they're going to win 8 games. And they may be the shock team of the United States this year.
Are they still doing construction on the stadium?
Yeah, yes. That place falling apart.
Oh, that's a shame.
So I have them last year going 2-10 and 0-8 in the conference.
Yeah.
They are going to be better.
Well, yeah. they are going to be better than that. Now, whether they win more than zero games in the SEC remains to be seen. Right. But they'll be better.
Well, what I was telling Tuna here is that Texas has the easiest schedule in the SEC. Their first road game, SEC road game,
is at Vandy.
Is mid November, and they are at Vandy.
Man, and I bet those crazy sons of bitches are going to travel like. I bet you Nashville's going to be a burnt orange.
Oh, it's going to be nightmare. Like Urban Cowboy, baby.
It's
going to
be a burnt orange nightmare.
Ride that bull. Good Lord. Ride that bull.
The people from Austin, Texas, clashes with the people on Broadway in Nashville. You couldn't get me like within 500 miles of that city. Well, too bad I already am. But anyway.
I think it's going to be like that Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other. Yeah. Like, Austin, Nashville, Austin.
I will say Austin has better music.
Depends on where you go.
Yeah, I guess you're right there.
Depends on where you go. I mean, them's fighting words.
Nashville's got a reputation
now.
You ain't been to
Pasadena, Texas before, son? To the Gillies?
I said
biggest
Austin
concrete
has
prairie
better
in
music
the world
than Nashville.
Oh, buddy.
But maybe for what Nashville's known for, I'll say that.
I would agree with that. Yes, for sure.
Well.
So who do you have finished third there, Frederick?
I got Ole Miss. They got Jackson Dart back.
Joey Freshwater.
They've got 10 starters on offense and defense. They came off a great win over Penn State, who I thought was a pretty good team last year. In their bowl game, I have Alabama fourth. Big question mark there. Everything's new. They do have a decent defense and a good quarterback that I'm not sure that everybody's on board with that. They're definitely going to be looking for some wide receivers. LSU is my fifth team. I have them way higher than a lot of people. But I do like Nussmeier, their quarterback.
Yeah, you got to like Nussmeier. He stuck around. He finally got his opportunity.
Jesus Christ, they got Harold Perkins. What happened to him last year? Their defense was so bad last year.
He's still projected as a top 10 pick in the draft.
Well, they swear that they have a new defensive guy here now that's going to change all that. Mm. And I kind of trust Brian Kelly to run a tight ship and have him better than some of these other teams that I have behind them, even though they lost a lot of receivers and their Heisman Trophy winner. I have Texas A&M next, 12 offense, 12 defense back. Mike Elko at the helm.
I'm glad to see you give Elko a little bit of respect. Because I love Mike Elko. I think he's probably one of the most underrated coaches out there. If you can win at Duke, you deserve it. And really.
You know who they open with at home?
Who?
Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be good. Oh, he's going against his former quarterback. Riley Leonard is the quarterback for Notre Dame.
I'm getting ready.
That's going to be kind of wild, honestly.
That'll be a wild game, dude.
Yeah.
I really want to take Notre Dame bad in that game, but the noise and the – I don't know. It'll be interesting. I'm going to have to look at that. And by the way, LSU, they open up with USC.
Yeah.
Now, USC looked pretty damn good the last time we saw them play. Their quarterback threw 5 touchdowns.
I don't think I seen him play last year.
And he was a – yeah, you did.
No,
you
I
saw
didn't.
Him play
Never
the
seen
Bill.
Him. Never seen him.
Then you got. Then we're looking at Oklahoma next. They have the toughest schedule in the SEC, I think, this year, and I mean tough. But their defense is always skeptical with vegetables at the helm.
Are you doing a full SEC breakdown?
No, we just went down a couple teams that they had listed.
We were on our way there. If you didn't chime in,
no, we did.
We were on six. We got 10 more to go.
We got like we don't even know who the guys are that are going to be healthy to play yet.
Well, I know who's healthy. Jalen Milroe's healthy. Jackson Dart's healthy.
Right
everybody's
now
he's healthy.
Right now
a lot happens in fall camp.
Well, I mean, they got a lot of practices between now and the first game.
Well, put it this way: we'll go. What I found interesting was how about we do my index? So,
do your what?
Well, they have the best chance to win the SEC. They only listed.
You're the smut guy.
They listed seven schools.
Who?
Only seven.
Who did?
Analytics.
The football percentage index?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be Georgia 33%, Texas 24%, Alabama 14%, LSU 5%, Oklahoma 5%, Missouri 5%, and Tennessee 5%. That's it. And we'll put a button on it with this. Chance to win the SEC. Never mind. I meant to say the championship game. Chance to reach the championship game is a whole lot more teams. Chance to win it. That was a chance to win the SEC. There's only six schools.
Let me ask you this question real quick to put a bow on it. How many teams from the SEC get into the 12-team playoff? Right now, just give me an answer.
In the 12-team playoff? I'm going to say four.
What do you think, Tuna?
I think you're probably right, and it's probably going to be two or three that deserve it. And the four's going to get the benefit of the doubt just because they got that logo on their uniform.
Well, the four's looking at it, yeah. Well, you never know, but I mean,
I don't see because you're
Tennessee ranked 10th, and
if
and
you
Missouri
got four in there,
ninth, then
you're putting three team losses in a 12-team playoff, and you're going to have some teams with one loss that get bumped out for a three team loss team,
right?
But this is what they asked for, right? They wanted to have this
it
all
is.
These teams,
it
so
is.
Whatever. You just got to sit back and enjoy it.
They've got 9 or 10 teams ranked in the top 25. So,
yeah, well,
it'll be interesting. I just wanted to get a little.
Well, that'll just wet your whistle a little.
Yeah,
bit.
Yeah, wet your whistle
for
just
college
go through
football
some things. You know, I didn't talk about the bottom tier, Travis.
you left Missouri out, which I think
I got Missouri 9th. I think they're ranked a little high. Personally, I think their defense has lost a lot.
Well, we're going to get into all of that as the season approaches, which obviously, if you are a longtime listener to this show, you know that college football is kind of our wheelhouse. And as you can tell, Freddie breaking down the entire SEC 2 months before the season starts.
I'm psyched up, baby.
How fired up everybody is. Can't wait for that. It's getting closer each and every day. As we are in the downstairs pub, sitting behind the bar, it's last call. And Tuna, I'm going to go to you first.
All right.
For last call.
So if you are a lunatic like me and some of my friends, then it is now the time of year to start figuring out a way to decide what draft spot you have in your fantasy football league.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh, get out the tuner helper.
Last year, we did, I think I mentioned this on the show, we had a video game set up where we did a Royal Rumble, and we all drafted a wrestler. And your position was done by
God, that's so good.
How you made it out of the ring. Well, just here's some, you can use that one if you want.
That's so good.
This is what we decided to do this year. We all randomly wrote down a top home run hitter of all time. We put them in a pool and we drafted those guys and we had a home run derby. And that was going on during this show.
I love that.
So if there were
you
times
never skipped a
I
beat,
seemed
pal.
A little tuned out, it's because I was doing that.
You never skipped a beat.
So Do we know what the results are of this thing?
Yeah, I tried to screw it over, and I did somebody. I put Tony Gwynn in the hat because he's
terrible
home run hitter. So I wanted to throw a landmine in there for some poor bastard to get a hold of, and luckily that was not me. I ended up getting Mark McGwire. And I finished fourth, so I have the fourth overall
okay.
slot. So, yeah.
Love All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
But just throwing that out there, they're kind of fun things to do. The Royal Rumble was a lot of fun.
I love those ideas. Yeah. I think that's fantastic. Freddie, last call.
Wanted to mention the TBT tournament is starting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
July 19th through the 23rd. That is the tuna. What's it called?
The basketball tournament.
What's TBT stand for?
The basketball tournament.
The basketball tournament. We got UofL representative. We now have UK representative.
And we need to talk about
and
Kentucky's team
God,
name.
They've got a all-star team to talk about. Let me tell you. I
got
to feel they're the favorites.
Bellarmine.
IU.
Like, this thing. And
it's
Tuna
growing.
And I
Play
talked about it.
For $1 million.
We talked about it. Last year, Tuna and I went to the first UofL?
Yeah, it was UofL's first game.
And it was so fun over at Freedom Hall. These games are fantastic. If you are a basketball fan, especially a college basketball fan, and especially if you live in this particular area where you know a lot of these players, you will get a huge kick out of this. Guys take it super seriously. I think it's a matter of time before this thing ends up being for like $5 million.
What about the criteria on it, too? What's the thing?
The Elam ending.
Which might end up being taken by...
I don't
who
think
knows?
It'll never be adopted by like mainstream basketball.
It's very cool.
It's awesome for what it is.
It is.
They did it in the NBA All-Star game a few years ago.
I was thinking they would do it in that the competition, the NBA thing going on that Ice Cube started.
The three on three.
I thought they might take that on the big three.
But it's fantastic. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyways, that starts up the 19th here, so that's this week. Everybody get ready for that.
I think UK's team
what
plays Friday
that
night.
On?
Fox for Sports. So
Fox Sports.
It's going to
so
be on FS1
over,
and FS2.
And now the TBT takes
off. God, I wonder which is going to get bigger ratings.
Yeah.
You think TBT can reach 7 million?
Folks?
I'm not sure.
Since they didn't let me go down my SEC list, I'm going to go ahead and tell you about something you got to watch on Thursday night. This Thursday night on ESPN, on SEC Network, is a storied, SEC storied. It's similar to the 30 for 30s on ESPN.
They're really good.
It airs at 7 o'clock. And it is called Saturday Night Lights. And it is about SEC games on Saturday night. And I think it kind of starts when Saban got there. And it goes into how Saturday nights in Baton Rouge and the SEC started just taking over as their conference started winning a lot of these national championship games. So it is a little documentary on that. If you haven't seen the ad for it, it's going to be legit. By the way, I wanted to give one word to the Copa America tournament. And I want to tell everyone, I use Epic a lot. That tournament was colossal.
Wow, that's even bigger than
Absolute
Epic.
Absolute colossal.
I had a couple things to mention. Number one, for people of my age or a little bit older or even a little bit younger that have traveled to Las Vegas even a few times or even if you go a lot, this weekend was the end of an era. In Las Vegas, the Mirage has closed.
What?
The Mirage has closed. They are going to, for those of you who have been there, and you know the iconic towers at the Mirage.
Oh, man.
Those are going to stay.
Okay.
But they're going to be completely remodeled. And then where the volcano was, which the first time I went to Vegas, like the two things I remember, the Treasure Island pirate ship show and the volcano at the Mirage. They're going to tear down the volcano and they're building a giant guitar-shaped hotel. It's going to be the new Hard Rock. But this weekend was the last weekend of business at the Mirage, and
it's
so
like we're watching the end of the movie Casino.
And so, like, I've stayed at the Mirage like 6-7 times, and I remember the first time that I stayed there thinking, man, I'm finally staying at a nice hotel here, because I'd first couple three times I went, I was not staying at a nice hotel, and I'll miss the Mirage. I loved the like, I think it was called like the Dolphin Bar, that pool bar that was that round bar out by the pool. They had a great sports bar in there before a lot of the newer hotels had sports bars like that, and so I wanted to give a shout out to the Mirage and kind of an RIP for that. And also, I wanted to mention, I sent out on a text thread this weekend that Tuna's adopted IndyCar driver, Stingray Rob.
Stingray!
Had a tremendously scary crash at Iowa. It came out today that when his car landed on impact,
I saw that thing, man.
He had,
wow.
He suffered a hit of 109 Gs,
dude,
which is worse than most astronauts would ever have to deal with.
Insane.
But thankfully, he's okay. He's been cleared to race this weekend up in Canada.
The technology they have is unbelievable.
Yes. Thank God for the safety advancements that they've made in the last 25 years. Or that wreck would have been terrible. But our thoughts are with Stingray, and we hope you do great this weekend in Canada. Want to remind everybody, we are on social media. Give us a like. Give us a, you know, let your friends know that you enjoy the show. We certainly appreciate each and every one of you that listen. And we will be back next week to talk about the Open Championship and everything else that happens in the world of sports from here till now. For the big fella of the Tuna Country, Matt Kempf, and the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, this is Travis Carter saying, so long, everybody. Thank you.